Item 634.
Amend underground wiring districts code to permit the attachment of wireless facilities on poles.
Current city code does not allow for attachments in the right-of-way in underground wiring districts. This code change would create an exemption to allow wireless attachments to poles in these areas, and it is my understanding that we are legally obligated to do so. PBOT staff Ann Hill, as well as Tim Heron from BDS, are here to explain and answer any questions. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you very much.
Yeah, the phone's okay.
President Udaly and the rest of City Council. This morning, I have a short presentation followed by invited testimony from BDS staff Tim Heron, who's joined me here today.
Oh, and I should add that I'm going to be introducing a substitute ordinance with some minor changes, which staff will also be explaining in their presentation. And I need to ask for a motion to accept the substitute.
So moved.
Second.
Great. I have the substitute has been moved by Commissioner Fish and seconded by Commissioner Fritz. Please proceed.
Thank you. I will briefly review small cell wireless facilities, their impact on city-owned poles, the need for the code update, and future next steps. I will then turn it over to Tim. So, as I'm sure by now you are all aware, cellular and wireless providers are currently expanding their networks of small cells throughout urban areas to improve coverage and increase cellular network capacity to meet the increasing demand on their current networks served by cell towers. It's anticipated that there could be as many as 2,400 wireless small cell facilities throughout the entire city of Portland. While most of those attachments will be attached to utility poles or third-party poles in the right-of-way, many will be attached to city-owned poles, such as streetlights. So what this city code update does is two things. The first thing it does is it actually adds TriMet as an identified asset owner. So the code up to this point has really only talked about utility pole owners because they're the ones that had attachments, their own attachments in the right-of-way. By providing a definition for TriMet, because they have catenary poles, they own different pieces of infrastructure in the right-of-way throughout the city, this will allow them to be considered a third-party pole owner, just like the electrical utilities. The second step is the code. We've amended the code to allow for wireless attachments on infrastructure in the right-of-way in underground wiring districts. And the reason that this is important is because in our downtown, which is largely an underground wiring district, the only poles are our ornamental streetlight poles, predominantly, and signal lights. That's because all of the electrical wires are underground, so we don't have...
Excuse me one sec. We keep losing the PowerPoint.
Oh,
it goes
sorry.
On and off. Keep scanning for a signal.
The other laptop one. Mm-hmm.
It's back up, Carla. Oh, now it's gone.
Oh.
Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, up.
Someone closed a door and it's back down again.
How many slides do you have on your PowerPoint?
Not many more. I think the only one that would be is just for you to see where the underground wiring districts are. But I think you have some of that in your packets as well. So I can just read. I don't have very much more to.
So it's basically downtown where the underwiring districts are.
There actually are six underground wiring districts, but they are literally like Grand Avenue or Martin Luther King Avenue. They're literally one street. And they're only small portions of those streets. The the largest area is here in the downtown. And when we realized staff that there were going to be no opportunities for industry to attach, which could be a barrier to entry, the first thing I did was call Tim and say, I think we need to start some conversations with the Historic Design Landmarks Commission and the Design Commission just around what this could mean in the future. So we did go meet with, I'm now, since I don't have slides, in March 2019, we did go back, return back to the Historic, both commissions actually were meeting together at a joint session, and we had completed an inventory of all streetlight poles in the downtown corridor, so basically the 405 to the river, and we identified every single streetlight that was not an ornamental pole. So we have about 500 of those that we can. Those are what we call the code heads. They're just sort of those aluminum standard streetlights. So we can offer those up initially to the industry to attach while we figure out what the next steps are if that's not going to be enough coverage. And so what the commission suggested was for us to go through a design and RFI process to actually get designs and see if we could come up with an iconic design for Portland. They weren't interested in a fake ornamental. They wanted to see if we could design something new. And this has become also important as we look at South Waterfront, that we need to stop probably designing infrastructure in the right-of-way that's only single use, like a street light. So it was a good exercise for us to go through. So we've had a kickoff meeting, and Tim's going to talk a little bit about that as well. We're doing this in partnership with BDS, and we also did invite parks, understanding that there's a lot of streetlights and parks and infrastructure, and just so that they can be part of this process. We've committed to come back here to council in the summer of 2020 with whatever that proposal streetlight design is, just so that you can stay up to speed and provide any comments or direction as well.
And in the meantime, they can or cannot put things on light poles?
They can, they'll be able to attach to the streetlight poles that aren't ornamental. The ornamental streetlights, like, physically will not hold them, so we will not be removing or replacing those. That will not happen until we come to council, and there's, you know, a discussion and a public hearing. People understand what and how and why that would happen.
Thank you.
In terms of outreach for the underground, this code update, I just did want to follow up. So we did actually two separate rounds of outreach. We did a public notice for the initial code change that was posted in the March 22nd edition of the Daily Journal of Commerce. And then we update that you see before you today was published in the May 28th edition of the Daily Journal of Commerce. We additionally posted it on the webpage at PBOT, and we notified every neighborhood association, even if it was one street, district coalition, local business associations, including TriMet, Portland Mall Management, Inc., and the industry partners. Additionally, we briefed, as I said, the design and historic commissions. So with that, I am done with my portion of the presentation. My apologies, I'm happy to send around, or maybe we can send around the PowerPoint. And I want to turn it over to Tim before we answer any questions.
Well, mine really needs the pictures. Is it going to work?
We can try it again.
Okay.
We've called someone.
You want to swap?
Yeah, let's swap.
Thanks.
If not, I have one here, which I can.
Again, my name is Tim Herron. I'm Bureau of Development Services, senior planner and Design Commission liaison, and sitting in for Hillary Adam, who's a Historic Landmarks Commission liaison. And I'm also sitting in for Commissioner Brian McCarter, Design Commissioner Brian McCarter, who is out of town this week. He otherwise would have gave this presentation, so I'm here to do that. And by extension, I'm also sitting in for Commissioner Maya Foti, Historic Landmarks Commission Vice Chair, who was also out, and this was really, I have more pictures than words, because it's part of what I do. So is it?
It's up right now. It's kind of flashing in and out.
Okay. All right. Well, I think what I'll do is I'm happy to forward to you all a PowerPoint with the notes included. Would it be helpful for me to talk a little bit about the process?
Yes, I think we should just see. My own preference is to keep the camera on you, Tim, so we can listen to you. It's very disruptive to have this thing come in and out.
Okay.
This is a first. This is a first reading of an ordinance.
Commissioner Fritz,
And if you could just post the presentation on your website, I think it's important for the community to be able to see it.
Well, that's kind of why I'm bumming. I don't know if this is going to be helpful to do for you all. It's to hold up a picture.
Tim, the two things that I'm hoping you'll cover, or one of you will cover, are what are the minor amendments, and also talking about, you know, I think this is another instance where we're trying to get out ahead of something that can be forced on us.
Fantastic.
And so we're trying to ensure the best outcome for the city, even if this is not the most desirable outcome for us.
That's fine. I have, basically, I would have otherwise had 9 slides.
Okay.
So let me just narrate those slides and paint a picture with my words.
Yeah, you could do charades.
I
could try to be, I do say that I'm as tall as a canister, a 4G and cantenna.
So as I mentioned.
What a potty pickup line that one is.
I know, 6 feet tall, yes.
So I work very closely with the Design Historic Landmarks Commission and work very closely with Ann Hill and PBOT. Well over almost 2 years ago, we started a conversation about how do we integrate these new RF facilities on our what we call vertical infrastructure in the right-of-way. And we very quickly zeroed in on a very possessive ownership of the twin ornamentals, meaning they're ornamental the way they are, attaching or integrating or trying to find some other way to attach these additional facilities to them seemed problematic. We worked through different charrettes and various things and realized very quickly that part of the Design Commission, Historic Landmarks Commission's role is we spend a lot of time protecting the public realm and how the realm is organized. So when I say public realm, I think about things and everything related to the sidewalk. These mean projecting signs into the right-of-way, which are reviewed by staff or the commission, canopies projecting into the right-of-way, the alignment and coordination with PBOT on where the street trees are, where the street furniture is located, the scores in the concrete, the brick pavers in the sidewalk. These are all things through advice of commission and working with PBOT that we feel is important to provide advice and design that space. And so no different should it be for small cell infrastructure in the right-of-way. So I'm on slide 3. Part of Commissioner Brian McCarter, who you all appointed to his first term back in December of last year, is his significant role with Zimmer Gunsel Frascoel in working through the TriMet bus line, in which runs up 5th and 6th, as you know, and we reorganized. There's a lot of street parts. There's catenary poles, there's ornamentals, there's ticket meters. There's a lot of furnishings that were very specifically and thoughtfully considered, co-located as best possible, so that that flow to and from that light rail alignment at these mid-blocks was as smooth as possible. This takes effort. We do design our streetscapes, and we work very closely with PBOT to do that. One of the slides we have was that, and Anna has already mentioned, is through this effort we realized, well, we should have a real hard inventory of where the twin ornamentals are, and then by virtue of where they are not. That was important because understanding the need for these facilities to come forward into our environment, that we have some measures in place before the requests come, President Udaly. That's something that we are trying to get in front of, and I think we are very successfully. So one thing we came up with was to establish a hierarchy on where these new locations may go vis-a-vis these small cells. Number one would be at street intersections on existing utility poles, meaning the street signals. I mean, we're in the downtown core. Signalized intersections where they have more of a functional feel and flavor. They're painted gray. They fit. That corner and that intersection, and that this would be the first choice. Number two was an avoidance of sensitive areas. And by sensitive areas, I'm speaking of historic districts, the North and South Park blocks, certain cultural areas, South Auditorium, the pedestrian malls, and other similar like locations. And so those we mapped. And we said, okay, well, outside of these areas, let's work the problem and find where locations could be. As I mentioned, we number three was what we time is just prohibited infrastructure would be the twin ornamentals. We just felt like the ornamentals are right the way they are. Adding to them, manipulating them seemed to be problematic. The scenarios we looked at got harder and harder. Anne's already mentioned, it's like, well, let's find these cobra heads. Very simple, very utilitarian. These are ones we should be adding these facilities to. And there are tentative designs for that. We also had a conversation, and this is where this a new stakeholder group's been put together, is maybe talking about how do we put together a new smart pole, so to speak. And when that pole would be something where it incorporates multiple elements. Anne alluded to this. One of the efforts that we did in South Waterfront was co-locate lights, co-locate street intersections, co-locate other features on one pole. Now, that in and of itself was worthy. Had our foresight been better, we probably would have been thinking about also integrating that kind of element. So one of the images I have, and I'm sure you're familiar with South Waterfront, is if you look around, there's a lot of co-located equipment, lights on intersections and poles, to limit the amount of vertical things and sticks that run along that furnishing zone. And that's something we're wanting to get in front of. I think we're looking at a 21st century city in terms of our access to any number of parts and things that show up in our furnishing zone. If we could co-locate this stuff, which also means heavier weight, stronger poles, a series of things, we're going to try and put on our best crystal ball forward thinking and have this RFI process, as we're calling it, where we have all these stakeholders involved, including representatives of the Design Commission and the Landmarks Commission, and myself will have another product and probably be back before you sometime in the future. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's my presentation. I hope I was colorful.
Yeah. So colorful. Thank you. Before we move on to public testimony, Keelan, I need you to call the roll on accepting the substitute.
Fish.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Udaly.
Aye. Thank you. The substitute is on the record now. Keelan, is there any testimony on this item?
One person signed up, Steve Entwistle, Sr.
Thank you. Welcome. You have 3 minutes. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Council. My name is Steve Entwistle, Sr. I have a little bit of a concern. Have you guys ever heard of EMF? Or EMP, do you know what I'm talking about? Raise your hand. If not, I'll tell you. EMF is electronic fields, okay? Electromagnetic fields, okay, that are, you may have heard of the smart meter electronic problems that they're having that's causing cancer, okay? Well, these 4G and these 5G instruments are creating problems for people, and people don't realize this, and they don't know how to protect themselves from it. There is protection available, but it's very expensive. You can protect your windows, you can protect your bedding, you can put a canopy over your bed, you can wear a hat at night so you can sleep. Some people have it harder than others with this EMF and EMP. Electromagnetic pollution, electromagnetic fields, they're everywhere. There's detectors and there's devices that you can test your areas and find out. It's new. People don't know. The doctors don't know exactly what it's going to be causing in the long-term effects. But they are affecting people. And we are not being protected. Okay, especially people that live in ERM buildings, okay? And I can go on with that, the earlier testimony about the ERM buildings, okay? The concrete pancakes that all the low-income people are gonna have to face when that earthquake hits, okay? And then the clean water that goes into the dirty water pipes into those ERM buildings. That needs to be discussed too as well. And it's known that we need to really be concerned, okay, about this issue with electromagnetic pollution that is being just every day it gets more and more. And the most vulnerable people are the ones that are low-income folks. They can't afford to pay for all that protection whereas some of you folks already have it and don't tell anybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Colleagues, any further discussion? All right. This is a first reading of a non-emergency item. It moves to second reading. Keelan, sorry, I called you Carla. Keelan, please read item 635.
Amend contract with TriMet for $6,571,781 to provide for enhanced upkeep and security of the Portland Transit Mall and the original light rail transit loop segment of First Avenue, Morrison, and Yamhill Streets.
Colleagues, this contract has been in place since the Portland Transit Mall became fully operational in 2009. It's an agreement we made with TriMet to ensure the success of public transportation in downtown Portland and to support its use by a wide range of riders. Catherine Levine, Streetcar Division Manager, is here to provide information and answer questions. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you. Just a brief background, when the mall was reconstructed and opened again in 2009, both agencies, City and TriMet, agreed to dedicate funding to ensure that they, the place, the transit mall, was well-maintained, clean, and security services provided. So what's before you today is an ordinance that would be the third 5-year extension of the agreement we have in place with TriMet. The total dollar amount is specified. That's over 5 years. I understand that there were questions about that, so I wanted to just briefly describe the funding. Basically, the Bureau puts over $500,000 annually into a major maintenance account. That's an account here at the city, and its purpose is to ensure that when it comes time to repave the asphalt paving in the mall, that we have funds available to do so. In addition, we provide over $700,000 a year to TriMet. TriMet, in turn, adds its funding and contributions from private property owners and contracts with a nonprofit, Portland Mall Management, Inc. They exist to provide oversight on the mall and to ensure that the maintenance, cleaning, and security is completed each year. Their contract is approximately $1.8 million a year in total. And I know there was a question about security services. Security services represent about a third of that total contract. We're aware that within the Central East Side, there is an exciting pilot program about to take place, Safety for All, which would have unarmed safety ambassadors providing security. We'd certainly like to look at how that is accomplished and whether we have an opportunity to apply that model here as well in the future.
Thank you. Colleagues, I just want to add that we will be coming back with or will very likely be coming back with amendments around the security MOU when this item returns to council.
Yeah, Madam President, if I could also just note that there during the budget process was a conversation about who's going to pick up the cost of the planter pots in and around the transit mall, whether that would continue to be a cost borne by Portland Parks and Rec or by someone else. We look forward to continuing to work with PBOT and TriMet to establish the right level of service and the right funding for this work. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Keelan, is there any testimony on this item?
One person signed up, Steve Entwistle Sr.
Welcome. Please state your name for the record. You have 3 minutes.
I'm Steve Entwistle, Sr. We have a little bit of a concern here. During social service facility closures, whether temporary, spontaneous, or permanent, homeless or houseless are forced to seek social services at other facilities. They need to ride the MAX to get there. TriMet dragnets homeless people looking for social services. Don't fund this. This is a trap. I think this is wrong. And I think anybody that knows that can see that. But this council seems to I don't know. It just seems kind of ignorant to me. But, and anyway, I'll make it real short here. Earlier today, what happened with Joe Walsh here in the corner here?
You need to keep your testimony relevant to this item that is not relevant.
President of the council, Udaly, Chloe Udaly.
This is about amending the contract for the transit mall. Keep it relevant or take your seat.
Well, my relevancy, okay, is my presence here, okay?
No, that's not how this works.
That's how I work.
Well, I set the time, place,
and I think
we set the time,
place,
and
manner.
And I think what you did
to Joe Walsh earlier today.
You're disrupting. Your testimony is over. You need to return to your seat or you'll be removed. I don't care what you said.
Well, good.
Goodbye.
Good day. Good night.
Colleagues, any further discussion? This is a first reading of a non-emergency item. It moves to second reading. Keelan, please read item 636.
Authorize a competitive solicitation and contract for the photographic traffic enforcement system and related services.
This is a second reading. Any further discussion? Keelan, please call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Udaly.
Gosh, so many people left here to hear this very important item. It actually is an important item. Yes. Over the last 5 years, there has been an annual average of 38 traffic deaths in the city of Portland. Many deadly crashes happen because of dangerous behaviors such as speeding and other traffic law violations. We just had one last night on Lombard. Expanding photographic traffic enforcement is among the 32 identified actions in the Vision Zero Action Plan, which aims to eliminate all traffic deaths and serious injuries. I want to address a few issues or concerns that came up in the first reading. First of all, although we're expanding the number of cameras, the Police Bureau doesn't have the capacity to issue additional citations, so we will be flipping the switches, turning cameras off and on throughout the city, but there won't be additional citations issued until Traffic Enforcement Division has more officers who can review those citations. These cameras reduce speeding, they reduce running red lights, they eliminate bias or perceived bias by eliminating interaction between police officers and community members. They make our streets safer for both community members and police. There's no chasing involved. The camera takes a photo if an infraction is when it's triggered by an infraction. So there's no chases through our streets. There's no vulnerable police officer standing next to a vehicle in heavy traffic. We've had officers hit. So while I understand concerns about over-policing in low-income communities and communities of color, I just want to assure my colleagues in the public that this is actually a better alternative than adding motors on the ground, that these are issues my office and my bureau take very seriously, and we will continue to work with community on addressing any concerns or disparate impacts. With that said, I want to share a little data with you about East Portland. Over half of the deadly crashes in our city occur on the high crash network, which represents just 8% of streets in Portland. Of the 30 high crash intersections, 29 are located in East Portland. East Portland also experiences twice the number of pedestrian fatalities per capita compared to the city overall. So while these cameras will be dispersed throughout the city, there's obviously a need for focus in East Portland. I believe it's my responsibility as Transportation Commissioner to protect East Portlanders as well as everyone else in the city. And this is one way we are going to try to achieve that. I want to thank PBOT staff, especially Dana Dickman, for all your work on this item. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. Please read item 637.
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County Department of Community Justice in the amount of $206,000 to conduct general heavy brushing and cleanup work.
This is a second reading. Is there any further discussion? Keelan, please call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Udaly.
Aye. Thank you. The ordinance is adopted. And we are adjourned. We'll reconvene at 2 p.m.